Good morning, everybody. Today's Divrei Torah should be Li'ilui Nishmas, Simcha ben Eliezer, whose Shiva has just concluded. He just passed away this past week. His neshama should have an aliyah from our Divrei Torah today. So last week we discussed about Kriya when one visits the Makom HaMikdash. And there were a lot of questions, a lot of emails that I received, and a lot of pushback, a lot of feedback, should I say, about the topic. And I thought maybe it was a good idea to go a little bit further into the topic, because there seems to be a lot that is unknown about this issue. So we'll go a little bit deeper into not the issue of Kriya about the Makom HaMikdash, but a little bit into the halachic issues that come up when one visits the Kotel. And some of these we might know, some of them we might not know, but hopefully we'll learn something this morning. Let's begin with the Kli Yakar. And this Kli Yakar, the reason I bring it is because the Kli Yakar, who lived in the 1500s into the early 1600s, the Kli Yakar gives us a little bit of a perspective of what we're supposed to feel when we go and visit the Makom HaMikdash. And unfortunately, if we can have a shiur about Kriya, and in the end of the shiur we talk about the Mishnah Brura, who quotes from other Achronim that one shouldn't eat meat on the day that they are going to rip Kriya or that they have rip Kriya, and there are so many people who look and say, how can you say such a thing? What do you mean? Kriya is supposed to be that serious? Yes, the answer is Kriya is supposed to be that serious. And Shulchan Aruch says, as we stated last week, that Kriya on the Makom HaMikdash is supposed to be similar to the Kriya that's done al aviv al imo. We follow all the rules of what one would do when they lose a parent, Rahman al-Islam, God forbid. That is what we do when we rip Kriya on the Makom HaMikdash. It's not like losing a different relative. It's like actually losing a parent. So when we talk about things like that, it should give us a little bit of a perspective of what our visits are meant to be when we go to the Makom HaMikdash, when we go to visit the Kotel. So let's begin with the Kli Yakar. Says the Kli Yakar as follows. Kala Mistakel, for those who just walked in, there should be some extra copies. Kala Mistakel B'Makom HaKadosh Ahu. One who goes and takes time to visit that Makom HaKadosh Ahu, that holy and sacred place. Miyad Nislabish Ruach Tahara U'Kedusha. Immediately they will be, Nislabish means, I guess metaphorically, they will be clothed with a Ruach Tahara U'Kedusha. Umelech Elyon B'Yafyo Yizbarach Techazena Einav. What you will see when you go visit a place like that is Melech Elyon, who's the God, the Melech Elyon, like we say in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, B'Yafyo, in his glory, in his beauty, that's what your eyes will behold. Uberiya Lechud, just with sight alone, Sagi L'Adam Liknos HaShleima Zahu. One could be inundated with Kedusha, just with the sight, by going to see the sight of the Shekhinah, by going to visit the place of the Makom HaMikdash, that will already make an impression on you, and you will be clothed with Ruach Tahara U'Kedusha. But Makom HaShakar La'Avram, this is the place that Avram Avinu calls Hashem Yireh. V'kribeh, and we read it, Yireh. Hayud B'chirik V'Yireh Hayud B'tzeri. There's two ways to read that word, Yireh and Yireh, which the Gemara learns in the last daf in Chagiga means, you should see, meaning you should go. We have an obligation 3 times a year to go. Shalosh Shvam Bashana Yireh Kol Zechurcha. We have an obligation to go and see the presence of God, but when we come there also, He, so to speak, looks at us. That's what the Gemara says. Yira and Yira is both meanings, that both we go to be seen and He comes to see us as well. So that's what he writes over here. Ki miyad bebo shama kishem shehashchina roe oso, the same way that the Shechina looks at us, so to speak, kachu roe pnei hashchina. So too, we have an opportunity when we go visit to see with our eyes the pnei hashchina itself. Umiyad. And immediately when we have that encounter, that experience, nasa and mushba umuatza, we become inspired, elevated, raised. V'davik b'ziv shchinasa yizbarach me'ein olam haba. Amazing way to describe what our visit to the Kotel is supposed to be like. I'm afraid many of us might not have this, myself included, but just to see what the perspective is from the Kli Yakar's point of view, and how he expects a person to feel when they come away from an experience visiting the Kotel. Gives us a little bit of an insight into what kind of powerful experience it's supposed to be. They say one of the visions the Rebbe has pointed out that we call it the Kotel. He said, as a Rashi Tevas, for v'napshi ka'afra la'kol tiya, that when a person goes there, they should feel a little bit humbled, a little bit deflated, a little bit more reduced, a little bit more understanding of what their place is in the world. You should be awed when you go to the Kotel. That's the feeling we're supposed to have. Napshi ka'afra la'kol tiya. You don't just run in there. I was thinking, if we have more time, people are interested, maybe we'll talk next week, or maybe we want to end. But for those who want to continue, maybe we'll talk, maybe if we can voice our opinion afterward, what do we want, to go further or to continue? But there is a lot of discussion about what one is allowed to do by the Kotel and what one is not. Let's say the rules of a Beis HaKnesses. Does the Kotel have a status of a Beis HaKnesses? And how about the plaza in the back? So the plaza in the back we only use at certain times of the year, when it's very crowded on Yom Tov time or whatever it is, but maybe we should say that once you use it at certain points in the year to daven, maybe that should be considered like a Beis HaKnesses, and therefore there are a whole bunch of rules that would apply or would not apply over there. So that's something important to point out as well. We don't have time for it today, but if people are interested, maybe we'll continue with that next week. So Rav Kook, they say also, he was involved in the Va'adat HaKotel, which was a group of people who were involved in understanding what was going to be the guideline with the Kotel, and how they were going to set it up, and how they were going to clean it up, and what it was going to look like, the whole plaza in the front. And there was a whole discussion about how everything should be done, and one of the people on the Va'ada, one of the people who was on that committee, came to Rav Kook and he said to me, "No, I don't understand, what are you all making such a big deal? In the end of the day, it's just a wall with stones, and what are you making such a big deal out of this whole thing?" And he said, "You know, the truth is, there are some people whose hearts are like stones, and that's somebody like you. However," he said, "there are other places where you look at a wall, and that really represents the hearts of all the Jewish people." And that's really what the Kotel is, said Rav Kook. When you look at it, you understand that that is the Jewish people over so many thousands of years have spread their feelings, have given over their hearts, and that's really what the Kotel represents. It represents all the hearts of the Jewish people. And that's what Rav Kook said, this is why we take it very seriously. So where does this idea come from that we have the practice to daven there? Don't we know that a shul is a makom kadosh? Don't we know that we have a Beis HaMedrash, a Beis HaKnesses is a makom kadosh? So why do we need to go to the Kotel to have that experience of davening there? Why do we assume that our tefillah is going to be answered there more so than in other places? So it really stems from a Medrash in Shmos Rabba Parsha Beis, which is number Beis on the sheet. Amar Ravacha. Ravacha tells us, La'olam en Shechina zaza mikotel hamaravi. We assume that the Shechina has not left from the place of the Kotel. Shenamar, as we read in Shir HaShirim, Dome Dodi, now this the Medrash doesn't say, but I put in parentheses, Dodi means my beloved, which is a reference to God himself. We know that Shir HaShirim is a metaphor for our relationship with God. So we're told, Dome Dodi Litzvi, Hine Zeh Omed Achar Kasleinu. God is standing right behind the wall, and that's where he resides. And because we assume that his Shechina is still there, therefore we have the opportunity to go and daven, and we assume that that is going to be a tefillah that's Mekubelas Yoser, that is going to be listened to in some way, more so than it would be anywhere else. So there's a, it's told about the Maril Diskin, that even though he lived in Yerushalayim, he almost never went to visit the Kotel. And they asked him, "Why? You've been living here so many years. How could it be? Why don't you go visit the Kotel?" And he said, "You know, I'm just afraid that I'm going to keel over when I go there. I'm afraid I'm going to faint when I come and I experience what it's supposed to be like when I come to a close proximity to the Shechina. I can't bring myself. I can't risk it." That's the kind of perspective that the greats of the last generation had. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz points out that we have a pasuk in Yecheskel that I forgot to put on here, but the pasuk is taken very seriously, and the Gemara discusses this pasuk, where we're told, "Uvavol am ha'aretz lefnei Hashem b'moadim." Am ha'aretz generally is the way we describe somebody who's not learned, but here that's not what it means. Uvavol am ha'aretz means when we all come, all the ame ha'aretz, meaning the people who inhabit the land from all over the land and come to Israel on Shalish Regalim to visit the Makam HaMikdash, Haba Derech Shar Tzafon lehishtachavos, if somebody enters into the Beis HaMikdash through the northern gate, Yatza Derech Shar Negev, you have to go out on a different exit. And somebody who comes in, Haba Derech Shar Negev, Yetze Derech Shar Tzafona, Lo Yashav Derech Asher Asher Babo, you are not allowed to go out the same entrance in which you came in. Now why is that? Explains Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, this is really what the Pasuk is telling us, but he just points it out, that so often we become accustomed, we become familiar with something, it becomes a habit to us. And it's not a big deal. And even when you're in a place which is at the spiritual experience of going to the Beis HaMikdash, what can be greater than that? And how can you be more inspired than visiting the Beis HaMikdash itself when it was built, watching the Kohanim offer all the karbanos and being so inspired by everything that was going on and listening to the Shira and seeing the Torahs being brought and everything. It's such an amazing experience, yet we're still concerned that a person is going to become acquainted with that, it's going to become customary, it's going to become habit, and we're not going to be excited. And therefore, we know every day in Pesukei Dezimra where we say, Shir LaShem, Shir Chadash. We have an obligation that even though we have experiences with God, we have to make up sometimes a Shir Chadash. We have to make sure that we excite ourselves. That's what we say on Pesach night. V'nomer lefanav Shira Chadasha. Even though every year Pesach night we say the same thing to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we thank him for the same Yetzias Mitzrayim, but every year we say, V'nomer lefanav Shira Chadasha. This is considered in some way to be a new experience. Or Chadash Al Tzion Tar. We're not asking for a new Yerushalayim. We're asking just, we should have a new perspective, a new understanding of what it means to have Yerushalayim, to have a Beis HaMikdash. And this is really what we're told every time a person walks into the Beis HaMikdash. It's not that we have new techniques and new objects. We don't have flashing lights that should excite them. But we have to have a new perspective on our own of how we're going to relate to the Beis HaMikdash. And I think when we become so accustomed to our great fortune in our generation when we become so accustomed to visiting the Kotel, and it's almost second nature, and it's not such a big deal to us anymore, to the point that we don't even understand why we should recreate or why we shouldn't eat meat. When we have something, an opportunity like that, it comes also with an obligation that we should try and figure out how we're going to make it into a new experience. Shir Hashem, Shir Chadosh. If in the Beis Hamikdash itself one has to go in through one entrance and exit the other way, to keep that excitement, to understand that we always need to have a spiritual renewal, so too, when we go to the experience of visiting the Kotel, we also should think about the story that Rav Kook said of everything that the Kotel represents. It represents Levavos Yisrael for so many thousands of years. We should think about the Maral Diskin, who was afraid to visit the Kotel because he was literally scared that he was going to faint when he came in the proximity of the Shechina. And we should think about the Kli Yakar, who tells us that when one goes there, they're going to be inundated with the Ruach Kedusha V'Tahara if only you open your eyes to understand what that experience really could be. So let's begin like this. The question is, as we raised, the Medrash tells us that the Shechina lo zaza, the Shechina never left that place. Ask the Rambam. The Rambam tells us in Perek Vav, Hilchos Beis HaMechira Halacha Tazayin, that's number Gimel, Rambam says, Lama ani Omer, why do I have the opinion that B'migdash v'Yerushalayim, when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash and Yerushalayim, Shekdusha Rishona Kedusha Son Le'asad Lavo. Why do I assume that Kedusha that was originally infused in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Makom HaMikdash, in the Kotel, why do I assume that that's still there? That's Kidusha Le'asad Lavo. However, V'Kedusha Shar Eretz Yisrael in Shvius U'Maisrus U'Chayotza Be'am Lo Kidusha Le'asad Lavo. What does the Rambam mean? The Rambam is of the opinion, we all know we just had a Shemitah, and everyone goes crazy during Shemitah, and you have to have the separate garbage cans, and where am I allowed to shop, and do I believe in the Hatter Mechira, or I don't, and do I trust the Badats, or do I not, and how am I going to shop, and what am I going to buy, and what am I going to eat, and then I go to Costco, I just got a Shiloh last week, someone went to Costco, and they're selling all these fruits, and what does he do, and they happen to be from Israel, and where do we buy a Lulav and Esrog, and it's very difficult to figure out about Shemitah. Well, I have bad news, I mean, I have good news for you, however, do you know that Shemitah Bizman Hazeh is only Midrabanan? All of this headache. Not that we should think any less of a Dirabbanan than a Daraisa, but can you believe it? Shemitah is only Midirabbanan. And then you have throughout the year, forget about a Shemitah year, you have Chumas and Maestras and all these things, and you're figuring out what do you do when you go and you buy the Costco oranges, the Jaffa oranges, and what do you do about this and that. Do you know that Chumas and Maestras is only Midirabbanan, says the Rambam? Eretz Yisrael does not have any Kedusha. Eretz Yisrael has no Kedusha any longer, says the Rambam. Believe it or not, all of these obligations that we talk about so often, Chumas and Maestras and Shemitah and Yovel and all these kinds of things, it's only Midrabanan because Eretz Yisrael has lost its status of Kedusha. Well, if that's the case, asked the Rambam, if you believe that Israel has lost its status of Kedusha, then why should we assume that Yerushalayim and the Makom HaMikdash still retain the Kedusha? How does that happen? How does that work? Explains the Rambam because there's a major difference between the infusion of Kedusha that came to the Makom HaMikdash and the Kedusha that came to the rest of the land. Says the Rambam, Lefi, Shekdushas HaMikdash v'Yerushalayim, what is the reason why Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash have an elevated status? Where did it come from? Mipnei HaShechina. It's because the Shechina resided in the Makom HaMikdash, and because of that we assume Shechina ain't a betela. Says the Rambam, the Shechina is never lost. The Shechina is never lost. The Shechina never goes away. Therefore the Rambam says, even though we have lost the Beis HaMikdash, even though the Beis HaMikdash is not there and we're not offering karbanos and we're not doing everything we should be doing, yet the Rambam tells us the Shechina ain't a betela li'olam. The Shechina never goes away, and that's why the Makom HaMikdash and Yerushalayim, which is surrounding the Beis HaMikdash, has not lost its status of Kedusha. Well, the problem is, the Binyan Sion, Rav Yaakov Ettlinger, asked both in his Aruch Laner and his Shalos Tshuvas Binyan Sion, and the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh has the same point in Bereishis as well. What does that mean? Don't we daven every day? How do you translate those words? May we merit the day when we see that God's presence will return with mercy to Yerushalayim. What do you mean? Shechina ain't a betela liolam. Shechina is not gone, so what does it mean? It's there. The Rambam tells us. This is why we assume that the Beis HaMikdash still is. So what does our tefillah mean? What are we asking for? And the Arachaim HaKadosh points out, when you look in the Gemara and Brachos, the Gemara tells us that, you know, when you have 10 people davening together, so the Shechina is there. And let's say you don't have 10 people. Let's say you have 3 people who are having a din Torah together. 3 Rabbanim who are sitting down and figuring out, adjudicating a case. We assume the Shechina is there as well. And what if you don't have a din Torah? What if you just have 2 people, men or women, who are sitting and learning together? We assume the Shechina is there also. And what if you only have 1 person, a man or a woman, who's sitting and learning on their own, reading it to Tehillim? How do you know the Shechina is there as well? So the Gemara tells us we have a pasuk that says God is always going to be there, the Shechina is always going to be present. So what does that mean? If we assume, even if you have 1 person who's sitting and learning by themselves, reading a Tehillim, that the Shekhinah is going to be present. So what does it mean? The Shekhinah is over there, but the Shekhinah is here also. What do I need that for if I have it here? Is that clear? That's the question that the Or HaChaim HaKadosh raises. That's the question that the Binyan Tzion asks. What are we asking for? V'secha zena einenu. The Shekhinah is still here. We all know Hashem is everywhere. So what does it mean? So he explains as follows. He explains, you know, just to l'saber es ha'ozen, to explain it a little bit in our terms. If I invite you to the wedding that I'm making, to a simcha, and the next day I say, were you at the wedding? I didn't notice you were there. So it's a yes or no question. Either you were there or you weren't there. You can't say, well, I was sort of there. That doesn't really have any meaning. Either you came or you didn't come. So sort of there nowadays in our way of speaking, in our vernacular, means, well, I showed up for 2 minutes and I left. No. But the question is, did you show up to the wedding or not? The answer is either yes or no. Well, that's not the same by the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah is not a physical body. The Shekhinah is not a physical experience. And therefore, when you ask, is the Shekhinah here? The answer is yes. How much presence of the Shekhinah is here? Well, that's questionable. So that, says the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, is the way we understand what we ask for when we say, V'sechazena einenu b'shuvcha l'tzion b'rachmim. Yes, it's true, the Rambam tells us, Shekhinah eina b'teila li'olam, that the Shekhinah is always going to rest in the Makam HaMikdash. However, there are different quantities of implementation of Shekhinah that can be in the place. There are different degrees and variations of how much Shekhinah is going to be there. Again, the Shekhinah has a very powerful, potent sense of awareness when you go to the Makam HaMikdash. You come to a minyan, to a shul, when you have 10 people davening together, we assume Shekhinah is going to be there. Obviously, it's not going to be as heightened a level of Shekhinah as we would have in the Makam HaMikdash. And when you have 3 people learning together, or 2 people learning together, or for that matter, 1 person learning by themselves, we assume the Shekhinah is going to be there, but it's obviously not going to be the same degree of experience of Shekhinah that you're going to have if you go to the Beis HaMikdash when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt. So that's what the Or HaChaim HaKadosh explains. This is what we ask for. V'sechazena einenu, that yes, it's true, we have an opportunity to experience Shekhinah even now, even when we go to the Kotel. However, it's obviously not the complete experience of Shekhinah. And that's what we ask for, that once again we should restore that experience of Shekhinah that we once had when we had a Beis HaMikdash in its glory, in its splendor. So the Rambam is of the opinion, as we stated, that the Shekhinah eina b'teila, the Makam HaMikdash, is something which is Kadosh li'olam. It's always going to be retaining its level of Kedusha. And this is the way most of the Rishonim agree with the Rambam, the Magen Avraham, the Mishneh Berurah, and Siman Tavkuf Samach Aleph, and Hilchos Tisha B'Av. They feel that the Rambam is the correct opinion, that we assume that the Makam HaMikdash has retained its level of Kedusha. Now, what difference does it make? Do any of us go and visit the Har HaBayis? I mean, maybe people do, maybe they don't. It's not my business. But, you know, my father always likes to say, he gets very, very annoyed when rabbis in Israel decide to get involved in questions that come up, in political issues that come up in America. They don't understand the circumstance. They don't really know what's going on. So for them to get involved, they only know a half a story. And the same goes for us. We shouldn't be getting involved in political and halachic issues that are going on there. We really don't understand the context. We don't understand the whole story. So people ask him all the time, are you allowed to go on to Har HaBayis? He says, go ask the Rabbanut. Go ask the Rabbanim there. It's not our place to get involved. It's a major political question. Forget about the halacha for now. It's a major political issue. Are you allowed to go on to the Har HaBayis? Might cause terrorist activity, might cause the situation to spiral out of control, as we see. Maybe it is the reason, maybe it's not. However, it's something that we should take with a degree of seriousness. It's not just a joke that you go and you visit and you figure out, well, is it a fun thing to do or not? It's something you have to take with a degree of seriousness. Is what you're doing really something that's helping the country, or is it not? You can't be so selfish and say, well, I want to have the experience, so I'll do it anyway. So most of us, I would imagine, don't go on to the Har HaBayis. So what difference does it make that it still has its status of Kedusha? The difference goes as follows, and this is a very surprising question. And this is a question of disagreement that took place for hundreds of years. And that is, what exactly is the status of the Kotel? What wall is that? And there was a major difference of opinion about this very issue. Do we assume that the wall of the Kotel is the wall of the Beis HaMikdash itself, the exterior wall of the Beis HaMikdash? Do you know that there were hundreds of years of opinions that assumed that it was? Or do we assume that this is only the exterior wall of the Har HaBayis? So when you stand outside like we stand, you're outside of the Har HaBayis. You're in Yerushalayim. So what's the difference? Kedusha. So what's the difference?
Less Kedusha.
What's the major difference? You're right. Less Kedusha. So what? So it's less Kadosh. Fine.
But it's still the place where
you are. Much more consequential difference. Are any of us allowed to go there? Why? Because the halacha is, the Gemara says in Makas Daf Yudalid, Habal HaMikdash Tameh, somebody who enters into the Beis HaMikdash in a state of Tumah, is Chayiv Kares. So it's very consequential. It's very important. Now, what exactly does it mean, somebody who enters the Beis HaMikdash Tamei? Well, there's a difference between somebody who enters the Beis HaMikdash proper and somebody who enters the Har HaBayis. The difference goes like this. There are two categories of Tumah. Something is called an intrinsic, a congenital Tumah that we assume is something that when you have something that comes, let's say somebody has a discharge. So we assume, a man or a woman, we assume that's an internal Tumah. That's a Tumah Hayotze Ala Migufo. That's category number one. Then we have category number two, which is more extrinsic. That's something that's on its own. It's, I came in contact with a dead body. I went to a cemetery. I attended a funeral. I was under one roof with a dead body. That makes me tummy also. I am not the dead body, but I came in contact with a dead body. That's called a tumas maga, tumas mace. That's not because anything intrinsically happened to me. That's called a lower level of tumah. It's because I came in contact with a dead body. So those two levels make a major difference. In the Beis HaMikdash, one is not allowed to enter whether you are a tumah yotzela migufo, category 1 or category 2. Either one, we assume, one is not allowed entry into the Beis HaMikdash. However, when it comes to Har HaBayis, there's a difference. When it comes to the Har HaBayis, we assume one who's a Tamei Mace is allowed to enter. One who came in contact with a dead body is allowed to enter. However, one who has a Tumah HaYotze Ela Migufa, one who has a discharge or some sort of emission that comes out of their body, we assume that they are not allowed to enter onto the Har HaBayis. Therefore, when you think about nowadays, Azav, Azava, Anida, Yoledes, a woman who just gave birth, or for that matter, any single woman who nowadays does not go to the mikvah, so they are not allowed to enter onto the Har HaBayis. So we would have a major problem if we would assume that this is really the choma, this wall is really the wall, not of the Har HaBayis, but rather of the Beis HaMikdash. What does it mean? That when you stand at that wall, you're standing on the Har HaBayis proper. So that would exclude many of us, unless one just went to the mikvah and made sure that they're tahar, that would exclude many of us from going to visit the Kotel. And this was a major discussion that took place over many, many hundreds of years. So let's look. So what's the halacha? What do we assume? What's the consensus nowadays? So it's pretty clear, like everybody stated, the consensus nowadays is that we assume this really is based on archaeological evidence and many other studies that have been done. We assume that this is certainly not the wall of the Beis HaMikdash. This is rather the wall of the Har HaBayis. Let's just read together that Tzitz Eliezer, who passed away about 10, 12 years ago, so he wrote about the consensus nowadays regarding this very issue. Is the Chomas HaKotel, is that considered like the Chomas Har HaBayis, or is that considered like the Chomas HaAzara? Is that considered like the wall of the Beis HaMikdash, or of the wall, the exterior of the Har HaBayis? He writes as follows, Pukhazi, go outside and look. Ad kama his labdu gedolei hadoros. Look how much time, look how much ink they spend trying to discuss kedei lidchos tainas maorim shachachme hatorah sheratzu lesser afilu ha'amida al yedei hakotel hamaravi. There were those who wanted to say, one is not allowed to visit the kotel. Why? Because none of us make sure to go to the mikvah and make sure that right after you go to the mikvah, you're going to go visit the Beis HaMikdash. If you do that, obviously that's okay. But for most of us, that's not the case. Mechashash, there were those who were concerned. Sheulai hakotel hazehu kotel hazar. There were those who were concerned that maybe this is really, in fact, the wall of the Beis HaMikdash, not the wall of the Har HaBayis. Vinimtza sha'om de meshatach Har HaBayis. Then it would turn out that when we're standing, davening right in front of the kotel, we are, in fact, standing on the Har HaBayis proper. Umeham shanatu lahaskim ledivei ha'me'orim. And there were those who felt that this is a very strong claim. Virak bo alea lahatir mitam macherim. Umeham, and there were those who said, shema'em es etzricha litva lekerion kedin hanichnas de Har HaBayis. There were those who said everyone has to make sure to go to the mikvah before they visit the kotel. Osha nizri b'chlami lalechas. There were those who said, shouldn't be going at all, don't get involved in the question. Osha amdu b'merchak ma. They stood all the way in the back of the plaza. This way, you have nothing to be concerned about. We don't assume that the Har HaBayis extended all the way back there. So there were those who went to visit the kotel because they wanted to daven, but they felt best place to stand is all the way in the back. This way you don't get involved in the question. Skip the parentheses. Amnam. Binogea l'kotel hamaravi. Kvar nimnu v'gamru. What does nimnu v'gamru mean? That's the Gemara's expression when we try to say it's been a consensus throughout all the greats of the generation. She'enenu mikotel ha'azer ki'im kotel harabai. So we're safe. We assume that nowadays the wall, the kotel that we all go to visit, is not a wall of the Beis HaMikdash, but rather a wall of the Har HaBayis. Ukedekosi b'sefer avodah tam ashar be'ez ha'yupozeh mikarov anashim ne'amanim v'nechvadim. There were very distinguished people, the Talmidei Chacham Yerushalayim Mir HaKodesh, uvesochlam hayamufla gadol b'Torah, and there were many Talmidei Chachamim who came, not just Talmidei Chacham, but great leaders of the generation. V'dibarti imam odot ha'kotel ha'maravi, and I asked all of them, what do they feel about going to visit the Kotel? V'kulam, all of them had a consensus. They all said unequivocally, she'ein lahem shum safek ha'es, there was no question in our generation. Whatever denomination, whatever community you happen to be a part of, so you would say, we're safe, let's stop this year now, go home a half an hour early, nothing more to discuss. However, we're not so safe. Why is that? Yes, it's true that the consensus is that nowadays the Kotel is really part of the Harabai as well, and therefore when we stand on the exterior of the Kotel, we have nothing to be concerned about. However, there is what to be concerned about. And that discussion goes as follows. We have, in Parshas Tazria, the Pasuk tells us, look in the bottom of the sheet, it's talking there in Parshas Tazria about a Yoledes, a woman who has just given birth. We know that a woman who's just given birth and has not yet had the chance to go to the mikveh, we assume she is not allowed to enter into the Beis HaMikdash. That's a classic Tumah HaYotze LaMigufo. That's a classic emission that comes out of a body, which we assume would make a person considered to be Tameh. Says the Pasuk, how do we describe what it means that the woman is not allowed to go and come in contact with Kodesh? So there's two descriptions that were given. Number one, Bichol Kodesh Lo Siga, which means, if I have a karban, let's say this is a karban, so somebody who is Tameh is not allowed to touch. Lo Siga means to touch. Number two, Vela Migdash Lo Savo. That's expression number two of how one is not allowed to come in contact. It means you're not allowed to enter into the Beis HaMikdash. Now, if I ask you, I see somebody standing outside of my house and it's raining outside, I say, you know, please come into the house. So when do I consider it that they came into my house? What would you say? Seems like a simple question. When they walk through the door, right? Or they jump through the window, or whoever they get in. Once they're in my house, I assume they're in. What if this is my house and I say, you know, please come in, and the person goes like that? Is that considered being in my house? Sticking a little finger in? No. Is their finger now going to be dry? Yes. But is that considered, would you tell someone later, oh, you know, Shai Schechter walked by my house and he came in. You wouldn't say that. I didn't come in. I just stuck my finger in. So the Gemara has a discussion about Bia B'miktas. What do you say? Let's say somebody has a Tumah HaYotze Ela Migufo. Let's say somebody, for whatever reason, a Nida, Yoledes, a Metzora, or whatever it might be, some reason why they are considered Tameh and they're not allowed to enter into the Beis HaMikdash. What if they have a Bia B'miktas? Yes, you're not allowed to enter Michal El HaMikdash Lo Savo, but what if they stick their finger in? What if a person sticks their hand in? Is that considered a violation which is punishable with kares? Is that considered like somebody who's Tamei entered the Beis HaMikdash, or do you say, no, that's not entering the Beis HaMikdash, you didn't really come in. Only if you enter the Beis HaMikdash, either most of your body, or you go in like a regular person, then we should assume that that's considered entering into the Beis HaMikdash, and you are now violating the din of El HaMikdash Lo Savo. Well, says the Gemara, from the fact that we have two expressions right next to the other. One is, Bichal Kodesh Lo Siga, don't touch. El HaMikdash Lo Savo immediately follows that. Says the Gemara, perhaps the same way touching is just with a finger, just like this, swiping the surface, so too maybe entering also means Bia B'miktas. Maybe you'll already be in violation just by entering, by touching the surface, by going in a drop, even though the rest of your body has not entered. That's what the Gemara has a big discussion, a big machlokas. It's a machlokas Rabbi Abahu and Reish Lakish, and there's a discussion about how do we paskin. And this discussion goes from one end of the world to the other. The Rambam is of the opinion, Bia B'miktas Lav Shema Bia. Come on, who are you kidding? That's not called entering the Beis HaMikdash. If the Pasuk says somebody whose tummy is not allowed to enter the Beis HaMikdash, it means you're not allowed to actually physically enter. It doesn't mean you can't just stick your finger in. That's not called entry. The same way if I invite someone into my house and they stick their finger in, that's not called entering my house. Well, the Ravid disagrees, and the Ravid says, you're going to be chayiv kares. Not just that it's not allowed, but you're in violation of something which is punishable with kares. If you just stick your little finger or your hand into the Beis HaMikdash when you're not pure, when you haven't gone to the mikvah, you are now in violation of a chayiv kares, something which is punishable with one of the most severe punishments a person can get. So that's a very consequential machlokas. You have the Rambam on the one hand who says, Bia B'miktas Lav Shema Bia, and the Ravid who says that it is, and it's punishable with kares. So the question is as follows. Nowadays we go to the Kotel, and we stick our fingers in, and we put a note in, and we stick a sitter in, and we lean on the wall, and we do all sorts of things, and you go there and you see everyone doing all different things, and they find a little crack, a little crevice where they get comfortable, and that's where they spend time. But perhaps, if you assume that the Kotel, even if you assume that the Kotel is the wall of the Har HaBayis, so you'll say, we're safe, what are we doing? But maybe Bia B'miktas Shmei Bia. Maybe a partial entry into the Har HaBayis is already considered entry. And therefore, maybe we're already in violation of El Amigdash Lo Savo. So what are you going to say? Obvious question. Anybody listening? What? Exactly. What are you going to say? Do I stick my hand all the way through the wall? Those stones are so wide. A person never goes to the Kotel, decides to stick a little note in, and goes all the way through. It's impossible. You can't go all the way through. So you'll say, what are we discussing? What are we making everyone crazy? Well, you have to know another piece of information, and that is the Gemara has a major discussion in Pesachim Daf Pehe. When you look at the description that the Gemara has about on the night of Pesach, so you had millions of Jews coming to Yerushalayim. Were you allowed to eat the carbon Pesach? What? No, only in Yerushalayim. Now, Yerushalayim does not mean Yerushalayim the way we know it. It means the old city of Yerushalayim. And it doesn't even mean the old city that we know. It means the real old city, which was very, very small, very limited. So again, think about it. You have millions of Jews coming on Pesach night, and they have a very short span of time that they can eat a Karban Pesach. You have to be done by Chatzos, and you can't start before 8 o'clock. So you have from 8 to 12, millions of Jews who need to eat the Karban Pesach only in Yerushalayim. The Gemara says it doesn't even stop there. You can only eat on a ground floor. You can't eat on a second floor. So how do you figure out how millions of people, it was total pandemonium, total mayhem on Pesach night. The Gemara even says that they used to rush people and throw them up to the roof to say, okay, you ready to eat your Karban Pesach? Get out of here. Go say how I'll finish up your Seder upstairs. And the Gemara says it was such an experience that Halela Paka Igra, that's the expression that the Gemara gives, that it felt like the roof was caving in because they were dancing, singing Halel upstairs. I'm sitting down here eating my Karban Pesach in a little corner. It was crazy. That's what the Gemara says. Well, the Gemara has the following question. What happens if you have someone simply cannot find a place to eat their Karban Pesach? So what do? Looking around, knocking on the doors, can I come eat here? Can I come eat there? No, nobody's letting you in. There's no room. Simply no room. Do you blame the person? There's millions of people all coming one night from 8 to 12 to eat on the ground floor of Yerushalayim. So you know what? I have a great idea. I'm going to go to the walls of the old city. I'm going to find a little crack in the wall. I'm going to sit there, a little bench in the wall. That's where I'm going to sit. Is that considered like eating in Yerushalayim or not? Well, you're in the middle of the wall. So is that within Yerushalayim or is that considered out? Ovi hachoma, the thickness of the wall, is that kilifnim dami or kilachutz? That's a discussion that the Gemara has, and you'll say, well, it's a theoretical discussion. It's not so theoretical. When you think about the description that we're given about what Pesach night looked like, you don't blame the person that simply can't find a place to sit. They're going to go sit on a bench in the middle of the wall if that's the only place they can find to eat. Well, what do we consider that? Is that considered like I ate my Karban Pesach in Yerushalayim? Or do we say, no. Once you get to the wall, Yerushalayim is now over. Now you're considered like you ate the Karban Pesach outside. You're as if you're mevatel the mitzvah of Karban Pesach. You're chayiv karis. Big difference. So the Gemara has this discussion. Ovi achoma kilifnim or kilachutz? Do we assume that the thickness of the wall is considered like you're still within, or do you consider it like you're out? Now this is something that there was a big discussion. Do we assume that this extended to other halachas as well? Let's say there's a halacha, lo savi al beso lavot avoto. Let's say I lend someone money, and the person isn't paying me back. So I got to go collect somehow. So I know that I have to go to their house and figure out what items I'm going to take from the house. Look, they owe me a lot of money, and they have silver and gold and everything. The house is dripping with jewelry. So I want to take something. They owe me the money. So it says, Lo sabo al beso labot avoto. You're not allowed to enter into the house. The shliach bezdin. I don't go on my own. I don't want to have an issue here. So I go to the bezdin. I present my case. They say, yes, in fact, the person owes you money. And the shliach bezdin sends somebody to the person's house to go and collect some of the money that is owed. Now, it says, Lo sabo al beso. You're not allowed to bang down the door and take stuff without asking the person. You have to wait by the door, and that person has to come out and offer you some items from the house in order that you should give back to the other person. That's what we're told. So the question was raised, the Chedushi Arim and Choshe Mishpat has the following question. What if the Shliach Bezdin walks by the house and he says, huh, the break front, I see, the window's open. I'm not really entering the house, I'm just going to take this, I'll take a little that. He starts sticking around his hands. Well, I didn't really go into the house. It says, Lo sabo al beso, don't enter the house. I didn't go into the house. All I did was I stuck my hands and stuck my fingers in, took a couple of things. Is that called Bia b'mikta shma bia? Is that called entry? Is that a violation of the law of the Torah that you're not allowed to enter into somebody's house to take something away? Or do you say, no, I didn't really enter? Well, you did really enter because how'd you get the stuff? But I didn't really enter because really I'm outside. So this is the question, do we extend this any further? Do we say that this halacha, bia b'miksa shma bia, should apply to other contexts of halacha as well? And this is a big question that the Rishonim discuss as well. Should we assume that it's only with regard to Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash? Why? Because over there's a serious consequence. If you're going to eat your Karban Pesach if you're going to enter the Beis HaMikdash just minimally, and maybe over there we're going to assume that you're in violation of an Isser Kares, That maybe over there we assume bia b'miksah shma bia, but maybe we shouldn't apply that to other circumstances in halacha as well. So when you come to our discussion here about entering the kotel, I'm sorry, about going to the kotel and sticking your hands and sticking your fingers in, this touches on number one, bia b'miksah shma bia. That's the first fundamental principle you have to understand. Do we assume that even a partial entry is considered entry? If you assume that that's correct, the way the Raavad paskins, that bia b'miksah shma bia, even a partial entry is considered entry, then you come to the next step, and that is obi achoma kilifnim dami. Do we assume that the thickness of the wall is already considered like the other side, the way the Gemara says, a discussion by Karban Pesach? Or do you assume no? Or do you assume obi achoma es kilachutz, the thickness of the wall is really considered like the outside? This is a major, major issue, which also has big consequences. Again, when I stick my hands in the wall, am I in violation of an Isser Kares? Okay, I think it's worth mentioning. Isser Kares is pretty serious. Am I in violation of an Isser Kares? Or do we assume, no, that's not really called entry, that's not called a violation, and again, the thickness of the wall might not really be considered like inside. Let's look at a sefer called Mishkanos La'Avir Yaakov. This was written in the late 1800s, early 1900s. This person was a great Talmud Chacham who learned every day with the Aderes. And the Aderes was the father-in-law of Rav Kook. He was the Av Beis Din in Panovich. He later on came to Yerushalayim to be the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim to take over Rav Shmuel Salant, who was the Gadol Ador at the time. So this person was his Chavrusa. And he writes as follows that he heard from the Aderes the following, the top of the second side. Kal yare v'chare l'dvar Hashem. He who fears and who has Yerushamayim, bevadai yachush l'nafsho. They will be careful to remind themselves, Shelo Yoshid Gam Etzba Achas Bein Sedek HaKotel HaMaravi Lebal Yikashel Chalila B'Safik Isser Torah. How do you like that? The Aderes told us, the father-in-law of Rav Kook, that somebody who's really a God-fearing Jew will make sure not to get involved in this question. And not to stick notes into the wall, not to stick our hands in, because we have a concern that maybe you're in violation of Bala Migdash Tami, which is very serious consequence. Just hold on 1 second. This is not only the opinion of the Aderes, this was the opinion of the Maharil Diskin, of the Chazon Ish, and of many, many other Gedolim. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, your relative, knows that you're uncomfortable right now. And he said, look, all these arguments make a lot of sense, and I understand where they're coming from, but I've never seen anybody that's careful about this. So I don't know what the answer is, says Rav Shlomo Zalman, but it just cannot be. I don't know why, but it just cannot be so. Who? So again, that could be. Rav Shlomo Zalman was a man of the world who always liked to care about the simple Jews like myself. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, look, I don't understand. How could it be that the whole world is violating Issur Kares? How is that possible? So again, he says, I don't know what the answer is, but it seems, lo ra'isi nogin kein. I've never seen that people are careful about this. So again, on the one hand, if you want to be very careful, there's a lot to be concerned about. If you want to go with Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's approach, you'll say, okay, I don't know what the answer is, but for some reason, there seems to be an assumption that this is permissible. Yeah.
What do we say about a Metzorah who sticks his thumb in by Shambit?
Right. That's exactly where the Gemara has the discussion. Again, a Metzorah is considered somebody who's Tamei. So the question is, how does he stick his thumb in and his foot in if we know that he's not allowed to enter into the Beis HaMikdash? Don't you see that Bia B'miksah Lav Shma Bia? That's what the Rishonim discussed there. That's exactly where the beginning of the Sugya takes place. So, yeah.
But again, the approach is that this is an external wall, not a part of the holy wall surrounding the Har Habayis.
I think the assumption is that it's a wall of the Har Habayis. Right? If you walk past that wall on the other side, we assume you're in the Har Habayis. Right? Let's say you go, I don't know, back when I was a child, you used to be able to go, you know, those green doors where you can really see the Dome of the Rock. So if you would walk in there, I think 20 years ago you were able to walk in there, if I'm not mistaken. That's the Har Habayis. Everyone agrees to that. So this is the wall surrounding the Har Habayis, meaning this hinges on that question. Do we assume that the thickness of the wall is considered like the other side, or do you consider the thickness of the wall to be like the outside? That's the question, and it's a major consequence. Yeah. Any questions?
What about you see everybody just leaning, kissing. Is that considered?
So we'll get to that in a second. We all have seen the practice in many, many communities that people generally write notes and put them by the kotel, in the kotel, whatever it might be. So forgetting about the fact that we have an issue now of how do you get it in there, because how do you stick it in without your hands going in, so that's a question. But where does this idea come from? I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong, but I believe the first earliest source that we have of writing a note and actually bringing it to the Makom HaMikdash comes from the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. And this is not a Baba Maisa, this is printed in the Hakdama to the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh on Chumash. So it's in every Mikraos Gedolos, you can find it, look it up on your own. On the first page of the Aruch Chaim on Chumash, you'll find the story where he writes that there was a person who came to him and he was pleading with him that he should have a skula for Parnasa, whatever it was. The person kept losing his job and he wasn't able to sustain his family and he wasn't able to support himself. So he goes to the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh and he asks him to please daven for him. So the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh realized that he was being very persistent, so he writes him a letter. And he says, please bring this note to the kotel and stick it into the wall. So that's the first that we heard of somebody doing such a thing. And then later on, he says to the person, don't stop, don't let anything stop you on the way. Go right away, take my note, put it in, and you'll have a skula for Parnassus. So he goes on his way, and there's a big tornado, a big hurricane, a big storm, whatever it is, and he loses one article of clothing and another article of clothing and whatever it is. He doesn't want to go run after his clothing because he said the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh told him he has to go right away with the note. And then all of a sudden the winds are so great and he loses the note itself. It flies out of his hands. And that's the end of that. He goes back to the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh. He says, you know, I tried my best, but look what happened. The Aruch Chaim says, it must be. God doesn't want it to happen. Because if he wanted it to happen, he would have put so many obstacles in the way. I cannot do it for you again. That's it. Later on, years later, they found the note and they read the note, which read as follows. I didn't put it on here, but it's a beautiful way that the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, you see, the way the Aruch Chaim had a relationship with God. Look how he addresses God when he sends him a letter, so to speak. Okay, so sometimes you go to the kotel, you see little kids are writing notes like, dear God, please make the Giants win tonight, right? So it's very cute. But over here, listen to the way the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh writes his relationship. We know that Shir HaShirim is a description of our relationship with God. So the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh addresses God as follows. He takes a pasuk from Shir HaShirim and he says, Achosi Rayasi Yonasi Samasi. That's like, dear God. So how does he say, dear God? Dear my beloved, my most cherished, my prize, the one I think about all the time. Avaksha, Avakshecha Barachamim. I ask of you with mercy, Lahashpia Parnasa Tova Laploni Bemploni. They don't say his name. V'chosem alav Shemo, and he writes in the bottom his name, HaKadosh Chaim ben Moshe ben Atar. Okay, so this is, I think, the earliest source that we have for somebody writing a letter and the idea of putting it into the kotel. Now, you know, there's a story that's told about the Nesiv HaShalom, the Slonim HaRebbe, so they say that the first time he was telling his Hasidim that he was going to the kotel, so everybody gave him notes, and they said he should go daven for this and put this in the wall and do that. And he said when he came there, he was so overwhelmed with the experience of Shechina, and he was so overwhelmed by the fact that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. He said, I couldn't have the gall to ask for anything but a tefillah for God himself. He said, I came there and I said, Avinu Malkeinu, Gali Kvod Malchuska Aleinu. That's all I asked for. I didn't feel it was right to sit and ask for this person's private need and that person's private need. All I could ask for is, don't you feel sorry for God that he's so alone, that we don't understand his presence, that we don't recognize what he means in the world and what it should be to have a Beis HaMikdash? And he said that he couldn't bring himself to ask for anything but that which God needs. Gale kavod malchuscha aleinu mehera. What we all ask for on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. It's a real tefillah. Something we should think about when we go to visit. It's not only about ourselves. What are we asking for? What do we need? What do we want? But it's, what does God want? Don't you think it makes him happy when we come to visit? Don't you think it would make him happier if we did the real service and the real Beis HaMikdash, if his Shechina was really here? V'sechazena einenu? That said, the Slonim HaRebbe is what he davened for. So Reb Nevinsal writes in the Mishneh Berurah, he has comments on the Mishneh Berurah, Reb Nevinsal points out that he thinks there are three reasons that one should not follow this practice of putting notes in the wall. Says Reb Nevinsal, reason number one is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Shomea Tefillah. We have an opportunity to communicate with him verbally, and he communicates back with us, and there's no reason to write our thoughts on a piece of paper. Talk to him. Have a relationship with him. Imagine if you come home at night and instead of talking to your spouse, you write a note that says, please wake me up at 8 o'clock in the morning, have a good night. You know, how would they feel? That, says Reb Nevinsal, is what we're doing to God. Instead of davening, instead of expressing ourselves, instead of pouring our hearts out, instead of crying, we write it on a piece of paper. We say, you know, see you in the morning, here's the note, have a nice day. What kind of way is that to approach God? He's the Shomea Tefillah. He listens to the way we talk to him. And therefore, says Reb Nevinsal, that's reason number one, why one should not have this practice of writing a note. Reason number two, says Reb Nevinsal, is because We have, let's say a person lives in the old city of Yerushalayim, back in the times when there was a Beis HaMikdash, and I'm having a lot of company tonight, and I happen not to have enough plates, enough spoons, enough forks, so you know what, I'll knock on the door of the Beis HaMikdash, and I'll say, would you mind if I borrowed a few spoons? Yeah, they might be gold and silver, but, you know, I'm having a lot of company, I just need some extra spoons, some knives, some cups. What's the halacha? Obviously you're not allowed to. Why? That's a violation of the iser of Me'ila. It's like you're stealing from the property of God. Who has a right to give God's property away to someone else to use? So over here, says Reb Nevenzel as well, the wall of the Harabais, the Kotel as we know it, is part of God's property. That's sacred property. So what are you going to use it for? To use for your own purposes because you want to stick a note in the wall and you have nowhere to put it, so you're going to put it into God's property? What gives you a right to use God's property for your own purposes? The same way you're not allowed to go there and borrow a spoon or a fork or a knife or whatever you might need, so too, who said, you're allowed to use God's property to be the bookshelf for all of your things that you want to put in there. Who said just because you want to hold a sitter up and your hands are getting tired, who said you're allowed to put it into the crevice? That might be a violation of the Isra of Me'ila, of using God's property for your own purposes. That's number two, reason why Rav Nevenzel says one should stay away. And reason number three, he says, is as we discussed, perhaps Bia b'miksa shmei Bia. Half of the Rishonim say that partial entry into the Harabais is already considered entry. The Gemara already discusses whether or not we assume Obi Achoma kilifnim dami, whether the thickness of the wall is also considered like you're already on the other side, or do we consider it like the exterior? Says Rav Nevenzel, do you really want to get involved in a shayla when just to stick your note in, you're willing to risk all of that, possible Isser Karis, just to stick your note in, that's what you're going to do it for? It's not worth it, he says. To get involved in that whole question and perhaps violate an Isser Karis is not something that he feels is a worthwhile investment of our time and of our energy. So this is a little bit about the practice of sticking notes into the wall. We began with the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, and that was Hine Zeh Omed Achar Kaslena, where the Medrash tells us that the Ribbono Shel Olam Lazaza Shechina Mikotel HaMaravi. We assume that the Shechina has never left the place of the Kotel. And let's look a little bit at an insight on that Pasuk. With this, we'll get closer to closing. Hine Zeh Omed Achar Kaslena. The end of the Pasuk is Mashgiach Min Achalonos Meitzitz Min Acharakim. So how do you translate that Pasuk? Hine Zeh Omed Achar Kaslena. God is standing behind the wall. Mashgiach min achalonos, he's looking at us through the window. Meitzitz min acharakim, he's looking at us through a peephole. So what's the difference? That's not the same. If you look through a window, you're not looking through a peephole. If you look through a peephole, you're not looking through the wall. So what exactly does it mean? So Rabbi Yisrael Salanter explained as follows. Bizman shachar beis hamikdash omrim chazal. Chazal tell us, since the beis hamikdash was destroyed, hukama mechitza shel barzel bein Yisrael bein avim shabashamayim. We're told that there was some sort of barrier that was put up, a metal barrier, an iron-clad barrier that was put up between us and God Himself. So you say to yourself, what am I doing all these mitzvahs for? There's a barrier between me and God? What am I davening for? There's a barrier. I don't have a relationship with Him. He's gone. He's in His palace behind the walls. What am I doing here? What's the point? Why am I trying to build a relationship with Him if He's not here, if He's behind the wall? Explains Rabbi Yisrael Salanter what it means is as follows. V'zeh amar Rabbi Yisrael Salanter hu ha-hevdel bein mashkiach min achalonos uvein meitzitz min acharakim. This pasuk gives us great hope in a time of churban. He suggests what it means is as follows. Lefnei ha-churban, before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, hayinu bebechinas mashkiach min achalonos. We had a relationship that was one of looking out a window. What does it mean? B'shosh ha'av mabit abeno min achalon. When my son goes to school in the morning and I look through the window and I wave to him and he waves to me, we both see each other because we're both looking through a glass window. Heim shneihem roim zeh zeh. Ha'av roeh es ha-ben, ha-ben roeh es ha-av. I see my son and my son sees me. And that's what our relationship was like in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. It was mashkiach men achalonos. We had such open communication with God Himself. We were able to look through the window, so to speak. We saw Him looking at us. He saw us looking at Him. That's what it was like. Keneged zeh, after the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, la'achar ha'churban mishehukama bein Yisrael le'elokav mechitza shel barzel, once there existed a wall, a partition that was put up between us and God Himself, mabit aleinu avinu min hacharakim. It doesn't mean that God has left us, that He's not watching, that He's not interested in the relationship. You know, sometimes you want to show your kids that you trust them. So they don't want you to look out the window, but you're still nervous as a parent, so what do? You look through the peephole to see, is everything okay? So you see them, but they don't see you. And you know that you care about them. They happen not to know that you care enough to look out the window, because you're doing it in a way that's so discreet, because you don't want them to feel violated. And that exactly is the experience of Achar HaChurban, says Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Don't think that just because a partition, a machitza shel barzel, has been erected, it doesn't mean that God doesn't care about us. It doesn't mean He's not watching over us. It doesn't mean that He's not involved in everything in our lives. And it doesn't mean that we shouldn't do things to make Him happy. It doesn't mean we shouldn't daven to Him. It doesn't mean we shouldn't communicate. Why? Because we know that God is meitzitz min hacharakim. He's looking out through those little peekholes. He's looking through the crevices in the wall, the little cracks. Even though we can't see Him, the same way a child can't see the parent looking through the peekhole, so too. We cannot always experience the presence of God the way we used to when He was mashgiach min hachalonos, when He was looking at us through the window. And one will ask, well, how does it make sense? If for so many generations they were never able to bring Mashiach, so what are we asking for nowadays? We ask that Mashiach should come in our days. What do we think? That we're really of value enough that Mashiach should come in our days? The Rama and the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo, and the Shach, and the Taz, and the Magen Avram, and the Vilna Gaon, and Rabbi Kiva Eger, all of them were not worthy, but we are. We're so much greater than all of them, so what are we asking for? How does it make sense? We ask for a Geula. We ask that we should have a relationship. How does that make any sense if for so many generations they were not able to? The Chafetz Chaim suggested that perhaps the idea goes as follows. We know the halacha is when you have a servant, you're not allowed to buy him for more than a yovel, for more than 50 years at a time. So let's say I buy this Eved at the beginning of the first year in the yovel, so I know that I have 49 years left to make use out of him. So I'll pay a lot of money because I have 49 years of use that I can get out of this person. What if 20 years down the line I want to sell him to somebody? I'm going to have to charge that person a little bit less because they only have 30 years left. What if 2 years before the Yovel, I go and I sell him? How much money is someone going to pay 2 years before the Yovel is up? Well, I can only get 2 years of service, then I got to let him go free. Says the Chafetz Chaim, it's the same thing. From the beginning of times, God was Chishev es Hakeitz. God already told us, not He told us, but God already had in the plans, in the making, when He was going to bring the ultimate redemption. Now we're asking Him to bring it a little bit earlier. So when they were asking Him 250 years ago, how much money are we going to have to pay? What price is the Jewish people going to have to pay to bring the Mashiach 250 years earlier than He's supposed to come? That's going to be a very heavy price. That's a price that we weren't worthy of paying back then. But nowadays, says the Chafetz Chaim, lo nidrash me'itanu tashlum gadol. Nowadays, when we're so close to the redemption, when it's impossible that we're that far away any longer, we're like that Eved who's being sold so close to the Yovel. So lo nidrash me'itanu tashlum gadol. God doesn't expect of us such a high price. Even though we're much lower of a Madrega than Rabbi Kiva Eger and all the greats of previous generations, but the price tag is much lower when we're so close to the time of Geula. And perhaps this is what we mean when we say v'sechazena einenu b'shuvcha l'tzion b'rachamim. We wait, we look forward to that day when the Ribbono Shel Olam will once again have a relationship with us, which will be one of Mashgiach Men Achalonus. When we'll be able to see Him, Misechazena, we should actually experience it. Not just that we know in theory that God is looking through the peephole, through the cracks. We should have that experience of actually looking at Him and Him looking at us through the window, where we see His presence clearly, where there's no question about the experience of having God in our lives. That's what we daven for every day, and this is what we so much look forward to our Chadash HaTzion Tayer. I wish everyone a